Well, mentoring, I call it the missing link. The missing link because it's the missing vertical link I feel our society is struggling with. Not only our evangelical society, but the complete society. If you walk into a large church today, what will they normally do? If you look young and maybe have toddlers, they'll say, oh, we have a class for you, it's the young with toddlers. Or, oh, you have teenagers, we have a class, go over there. Or, oh, you look like maybe you're senior citizens, well, the senior citizens or the upwards in 80 or whatever it's called, they're over here. Or the singles, well, you can be down here. Well, what we've done is we focus so much on affinity groups, and it's important to have affinity groups to talk about our problems and our concerns that we jointly share. But what's missing is the vertical link. Constantly, I hear young people talking about problems and struggling with issues, and they're talking with one another at the same age level, but they have no experience to bring into the solution of their problem. No one linking vertically from one generation to the other to pass on experience, values, wisdom, tips, you name it. And I don't know why it's that way. Why do you think it's that way? Why do you think that we're having trouble with the vertical link in generations, the vertical generational links? What comes to your mind? Jack, you're smiling.
Well, the reason I'm smiling is because in the church that we attend in Wichita, we're facing that same problem. Especially if we have a young staff. I say young, but young to me, they're about 40 years old. Mm-hmm. And we have quite a few people that are senior citizens. And there's just a continual struggle between the gap of the older people and the younger people. Mm-hmm. And how we emphasize discipleship and evangelism and things like that, and we have
to come up with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's
we'll talk. Yeah.
I'm not sure what the answer is, but I think a couple of reasons that we have a problem. One, I don't think there's the respect for spirit there was in the generation. Mm-hmm. So people aren't really looking for their answers from people. But I think the other thing is we're focusing so much on things like becoming whole and our baggage and our psychological problems, things we carry from our youth, and we're looking for answers in that rather than focusing on, I think what was focused on maybe a generation or two ago, the Lord and personal growth and a spiritual emphasis. And so then we find people sort of pulling together in affinity groups because they want to talk about parenting or this kind of thing rather than the things that cross generational lines and starting there. And then I think parenting and that can come out of that. But I think if we were focusing on some of the things that cross generational lines, we would then begin to want to.
Is that not a problem throughout our age? We we're over vocationalized. We have an educated PhD. We don't have the generalist in management and education from any.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's true, yeah.
So it seems that affinity groups is easy and vertical lines are difficult. The vertical lines require output of energy by the person who's training and requires submission by the person who's learning. And that's harder. It's a lot easier to go into an affinity group and talk to people in the same situation as you are.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, or, but you're just missing input. I can give you illustration after illustration because I've been tracking in the subject for a number of years. But my mother, who's 85, she's alert, she still drives, she went to a senior citizen women's or senior group in the church, and they didn't want to do Bible study, they just want to talk, she said. So she said she found out a Bible study fellowship where they have to do 3 or 4 hours of work. And so she does that with her thick glasses and she goes there. Well, it just so happens that the woman leading her study is in her early 50s. And we know her. And so we were chatting with her one time. She said, "Your mom has brought so much to the group." And I said, "Well, that's funny, because she doesn't feel she adds anything." She says, "No." She says, "She's the only one that we who are becoming grandmothers can talk to who's already a grandmother and already a great-grandmother. And she knows how to relate to grandkids and relate." She says, "And in life, she went through the depression when they didn't have any money. And several of them didn't are experiencing that. They're out of jobs, and they're wondering what's going on." And so they would ask my mom, and it was just like when Dean Witter speaks, everyone listens. And so when they ask, she'll start saying, "Well, what we did was," and everybody kind of leans forward, just somehow to get an experience of someone who's gone before us. When I went to Vienna, Austria, with the Navigators to be a part of our work into Eastern Europe, I got there and there was no staff, and we had four kids, and age 9 down to 6 months. And suddenly I found myself, I grew up in a good Christian home, but I wasn't sure how well I was doing as a dad. So I looked around, and my devotions or the times we were having in the Word weren't great, and I was almost ready to give up there, and just wondering who could help me. And so I was sitting in church one day, and the pastor, and we were still learning the language, we were about 7-8 months into it, so I was getting enough German to understand a few points, but it turns out the pastor was a German immigrant to Canada, lived in Canada, and then came back, so he was a Canadian, but he was there, had been there for 20 years, a super guy, and I suddenly realized he has older kids, and they're all doing well. We really admire their family. I wonder if I could talk to him. So I went to him and asked him a couple of questions about getting into the society and getting into German and thinking and all the rest. And I said, his name is Abe, and I said, "By the way, Abe, how did you do with your family and you know, devotions?" And he says, "Well, we persevered." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" "Well, we got together, got a little time the next day, and he told me what he did." "Well, he gave me some good tips." Well, then we kind of worked on that a little bit, and then my son, who was 4 years old, was going to a kindergarten. He didn't speak the language yet, and so he would cry every time I would bring him to Sunday school or to kindergarten. We'd walk up the stairs, and his intensity of his crying and going, "Oh, Dad, no, don't bring me." And I thought I was going to permanently impair him, and he would be psychologically deranged, this event would just permanently affect his life. So I didn't know what to do, and this went on for a couple of weeks. So I thought of Abe again. So I talked to Abe, and Abe said, "Oh," he said, "my one son took us 3 months before he stopped crying." I said, "3 months?" He said, "Yeah, 3 months." So I said, "Well, what did you do?" He says, "Well, we just kept praying." And he says, "We thought about quitting, but we just kept pressing on. And eventually it took play. You know, he just got in there." I said, "But 3 months?" I said, "Didn't you? How does he feel today?" He says, "Well, he's 20 years old, and he doesn't even remember it." And I said, "Well, oh, okay, you know." Well, we kept pressing. Now, it only took 6 weeks. But had he not encouraged us, had he not... And then we had him over, and he observed our devotions, and he gave me a couple of good tips. And he became a mentor for us for about a whole year on that transitional time, getting as a dad, in a new time I hadn't faced yet, where some of the older kids wanted something older, and the younger kids are still squirming. What do you do in that case? Well, he'd been there. He had four kids as well. So we need mentors in everything, professionally, in our homes. Titus 2 talks about older women teaching the younger women, how important that is. And I don't see that happening in a lot of places. I go to churches, and very rarely do you see a mixed bunch. A friend of ours, one time, just out of desire to help some of these younger women, in her church here locally, just put out a little call and said, any women that'd like to spend 6 months learning how to love their husbands and love their kids and just be a mother and be a wife. We're going to spend 6 months meeting once a week if you'd like to do that. she had 12 women sign up and another 12 got on a waiting list. There was such an eagerness for it. So I see it all over. I see pastors who are 40 running into problems with their situations because they come out with these new ideas. And like you just said, they've got other people. And I'm meeting with one pastor now. He's 35, and he wants to throw out all his older, 50 and older, because he says that they're just trying to be restricted. They don't want to move. They want to go anywhere. And he's trying to turn this into that and do this and cut out this service and go for that. So we're meeting to try to help him work through that. And we just have spent hours discussing it and praying it and thinking. And so now he's meeting with two of those older men, and he's been doing that for 4 months. And you know what? He says, boy, they're godly. Boy, they helped me. They've helped him in other areas. And he's seeing that they don't want to restrict God's work, but they've got some other things that they're concerned about too. And, you know, in other words, there's just some linkage going on. We know Paul and Timothy. We know Elijah and Elisha. And we know many link-ups of mentoring relationships in the Scriptures. The one that fascinates me is in Acts chapter... it starts in chapter 9. We won't have time to go through a lot of it, but it's Barnabas and his influence and effect on Paul, who was young Saul. Remember, he came into town, Acts chapter 9, verse 26, it says, and he came to Jerusalem and he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he really was a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. That was the beginning. What do you think Barnabas saw in this young Saul? Huh? What do you think? What motivated Barnabas to do this? Yeah, okay. So he saw something there that was worth getting involved with. Now, Barnabas is the kind of guy that we found out later, of course, is Paul actually goes ahead of him later. But I would say, and for a number of you that look here, you're in the place to be mentors. And that mentor needs to see potential, needs to see something. Others didn't see it. They saw nothing but a converted zealot who might disturb things if he gets in too close. They're afraid of him. But Barnabas saw in Paul something special. And you'll see what he does. He links them in, and on his own credibility, he offers his own reputation to draw him in, to give him credibility, to let him move among those disciples. And then we see later on, Paul begins verse 26, Saul stayed with them and moved about freely in Jerusalem, speaking boldly in the name of the Lord Jesus. He never would have had that opportunity had Barnabas not been there, been his mentor. But it didn't stop there. What happens next? Remember, Barnabas is sent up to Antioch, and you go over to chapter 11, right towards the end. Verse 22, news of this reached the ears of the church of Jerusalem, that is what God was doing in Antioch, and they sent Barnabas to Antioch. When he arrived and saw the evidence of the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all to remain true to the Lord with all their hearts. He was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit, faith, and a great number of people were brought to the Lord. Then, you see, he realized these are Greek minds, these are people here that are going to need some teaching. And he says, you know, that rascal Saul, he's the kind of guy. Now, he needs some development. He needs to get more teaching and growth. But I think I'll go get him. Look at that. Verse 29, that is. I guess 25. What is it? I've got my pen. 25. Yeah. Then Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul. And when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. And then we know, of course, in chapter 13 that these two were sent out as missionaries. Now, what do you think Barnabas had in mind? What do you think? He was going to develop him. You know, he said this: the best way to get a guy like that developed is put him in action. Get him in there. So Barnabas took a guy who with all these gifts began to bring him, involve him, and they taught. You can imagine that after they taught and Barnabas taught, then Paul would come up, and probably he was a much better speaker. He was a debater. He was such a gifted man and intellect. And he'd sit there and he'd ask Barnabas questions, and you know, and as the wee hours of the night, and get all that down. And the next morning he'd go out and probably preach. And you know, there was a tutoring, a mentoring going on here. So we can see this, and there's no greater joy for a mentor to take a hold of somebody with potential and begin to nurture them and move them into a level of effectiveness in their home, in their business, in their church, ministry, whatever it is. It's really critical. So that's a fascinating study if you want to get into just Barnabas with Paul, because it's just Barnabas is not the kind of guy we think of as this great, powerful guy, but he probably made one of the most significant contributions to the church in the way he took care of Paul. So, mentoring. What is your experience so far with mentoring? Have any of you been involved, been mentored, or have mentored some others? How about you, Jack? Some experience with it?
Not a lot. Mm-hmm. Probably more with my two children.
Yeah, great. Well, and that's a big area. We'll see that. Gary?
Yeah, I think we have over the years.
More receiving or mentoring others?
We've done a lot of receiving.
Uh-huh.
And we've been helping some couples.
Good. Okay, so there's something in there. Yeah. Good. I'll get to that. Good question. Where I've come out on that is yes. The way we see discipleship today, I put it as part of the overall subject of mentoring, and you'll see that. Have you had any experience, John, with it?
My experience has been that more people after the fact have come and thanked me for mentoring them than I was aware I was doing at the time.
And John, I bet there's more you haven't even heard of, and I bet from you as well. There's people like that, and you've gotten that feedback as well.
Yeah. Just Wednesday night.
Just Wednesday night. That's great. And Dave, you've been.
Yeah, I've
been there. Uh huh. Yeah. Right. My experience is so far, and Marge, you've 4 super kids and a lot of. Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, you know, one of the things that I hope perhaps we will touch on that will help is this whole idea of bringing more plan into what you're doing, not in some kind of a specific role. But I find it has just shifted my relationships, either to mentor or be mentored, tremendously. By just, for instance, I started to meet with a young guy, and he came up to me, and he's 30 years old, a big fella. He started for University of Oklahoma basketball team, and met Christ, but never really grew, and he was lifted up, and you know, he ran around, gave his testimony. But his life, and being a dad, he had a terrible dad. A guy who was it was an unfortunate situation. So he says, "Hey, can we meet together?" You know, and because his wife's in my wife's Bible study, and so we get together. And I said to him, "Steve, what would you want to get out of this relationship if we pursued it?" He says, "Well, I just kind of like getting together." I said, "Yeah, but it would really, I do too. But if that's all you want to do, but we could pursue some things. I sense that you really want to grow in a couple areas. Perhaps as a dad, perhaps maybe in the areas of your family, or maybe just even personally. Is there something we could do together that would enhance that?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, let's think about that." Anyhow, over the next couple weeks, we did. And we set out expectations that over the next 6 months, let's just kind of work towards those expectations. And after 6 months, we'll say, "Hey, I'd rather just let's be friends. Or let's just kind of go after it and pray together." Or maybe we'd want to pursue it more, but let's just go after it. He says, yeah, okay. So we did. And we've had just a terrific 6 months, and now we're going to reevaluate that. I'll meet with him next week and just kind of think about it. Now, hasn't he become a kind of a student? Now, he's only 30 and I'm 50, so there's a gap there, and he recognized that. Put his arm around me the other day. We were walking out of this little place where we meet, and he says, you know, I told Lise the other day, you're becoming the dad I never had. And I thought, holy cow. You know, I play basketball with him. You know, I thought, you know, you don't realize that. Just like you, we're just kind of talking about things. We haven't done any Bible study, nothing. We've just talked about how he can be a dad to his kids. That's his biggest thing right now. He's got two young boys. So you get into this kind of thing, but just by identifying a few things, you can change it. Let's flip to the definition here. It should be on your page. That square on the top. Let me just kind of jot that. And just pull these here. As you can see, what I've called mentoring is basically a relational experience. It's the one you have? Yeah. A relational experience. It's one. Get that down a little bit. It's one sharing with another the God-given resources. And if you drop down here, you see these God-given resources. I've just mentioned a few. Wisdom, information, experiences, confidence, insight, status. Now, what, for instance, initially did Barnabas give to Paul of God-given resources that he had? What was the first thing he gave to him? What comes to your mind? Okay. He gave him confidence. So, you know, he also gave him some of the status, didn't he? So he had the status, Paul didn't, and he was able to say, put his arm around and said, I'd like you to meet this young man, Saul. Don't worry about him. He's okay. I've checked him out. He's one of mine. Now, have you ever seen that happen? It really is terrific. When I went to Eastern Europe and to the Soviet Union the first time, I was in my late 40s. And not only was I young, but I looked younger. And there they revere age. And so here I was meeting with the leaders of the underground. And they were all in their 50s and 60s, godly men. And I was trying to tell them about discipling and all the rest. And I had already met with this one. And so they got into a conversation. And one guy walked over and put his arm around me, one of the senior men, and just said, God has sent Paul to be with us. He's got a message for us. Let's listen. That little affirmation opened the door for us. I found out later. It never would have happened. Because their culture is especially that way. So he shared his status with this young guy.
He spoke himself.
He took a chance too, didn't he? Yeah. He put a risk. Uh-huh.
In case he'd been false, he would have been in trouble.
He would have been in trouble. But I bet he would have taken his arm around me again but maybe walked me into another room and said, now listen here, young man. And we would have had a different stage of mentoring. So I want to just get across to you, and I think you probably already understand that. It's a relational experience that results in empowerment. And the empowerment takes place in the idea of growing, becoming more, developing, in other words, strengthening what you already have, or change. And those things can happen as a result of this relationship. Now, the next thing you have here is something that looks like this, which I call the constellation model. Yes.
How long did it take you to establish that relationship with that person to where he risked his relationship with his other people by?
It probably took me several months, but I had an advantage because the voice to Russia called, his name is Earl Poisty. He's respected and regarded and has been for 25 years in the Soviet Union. Became a real close friend of mine. And he sent in a letter to this guy on our first time and said, I want you to meet Paul. You can trust Paul. You can, you know, and he told him some little about. Then I got to know that guy over a period of a couple months. And then he suddenly stepped forward.
That letter was true.
That letter, yeah, well, so in other words, without those two men, we never would have made it in. They share their status, their reputation. Oh, no, no, that's anytime. That's just. So this is what the problem I had when I first got into mentoring back about 15 years ago, really thinking about this. I found that everyone was looking for this one big mentor who knew it all, had it all together, but he never existed. There are a few of those people around, but there's not enough to go around. So I found a lot of people who were potential mentors felt like they had nothing to offer. In other words, you know, I bet you some of you, if you said, well, now, do you have something to offer to young people? You'd say, well, God's done a few things in my life, and I guess I have some experience. But nobody would say, yeah, I have lots to offer, you know. We're all a bit humble in that area. And I think it helps us to understand we don't have to be everything. Nobody's looking for a perfect mentor, just one that's progressing. Just one that's making some progress in their life and has experienced something. They, just like that definition said, a mentor is one who has experienced or knows something. And so what I've done is broken these down basically into these eight categories, and we'll cover those. And then mentorees are some people who, just like Saul was, who need something, who need experience. And some of them aren't even acknowledging it. One of the issues I saw, as we were talking about earlier, is why we have this vertical link, that the missing link in the vertical, is that knowledge has been lifted up tremendously. I met, I know a fellow who's about 40 years old. He is already intimidated by those men in their mid-20s coming out of colleges. He's in the computer industry, the high-tech industry, and he said, these guys know more than I do. So what happens is these younger guys feel they know more than the guys who are 10 years ahead of them, so they said, well, I don't need a link. But the sad thing is they may know more knowledge, but what makes life go, they don't have. And see, that's the sad thing. We're transferring more knowledge into thinking we have more maturity, more experience, we can solve more of our problems, but we're running into just walls. And it's just not, it's just not God's pattern of how we develop. And then the peers. Peers, what I call co-mentoring, is an important area. It's a whole different dimension than the vertical link. And we won't have time to touch on that today. But let's just get into this. Let me help you identify these areas, and then let's just talk a little bit about where you are. I've got a one that helps me write easier here. If you look at those definitions, that I have, not the one page of the what I call the central thrust. I think it should be the next page, is it not? Okay. And you'll see, this is where you had asked, Susan, that the is discipling part of overall mentoring, and that's what I've put it as. So you'll see there. There's the intensive people, and here we have the discipler. Now, the discipler, as you see here, is one who enables in the basics of following Christ. Now, many of you, if you've had some NAV background, you've had that person in your life. The discipling relationship, however, doesn't last forever. It ought to have a time to it. It ought to somehow come to an end at certain points. But I know many people that have never had that experience. They've never been established in the basics. And if you had a continuum here that went out this way, this area is what we would call more deliberate, much more deliberate in our meeting together, our planning, our thinking. And of course, this would be less. And you can see that as we move to the right. This intensiveness takes place, for instance, as a discipler, where there's a motivation. Now, what would be a goal? When would you recognize that you're finished as a mentor, if you were a discipler mentor with someone? When would you say, I think we've finished this phase, this point? When your mentoree is what? What comes to your mind? I mean, we never stop learning how to follow Christ. But remember, the central thrust here is the establishment. So what would we see from that person? Okay. Mm-hmm. Consistency in what? Okay, so some of the basics, like prayer, getting into the Word, meeting with God. Uh-huh. What other things? Okay. Okay, so. Okay. You're seeing that starting to come out? Yeah, okay. Starting to pass that on. I think one of the things, too, that you're looking for is you want to see often whose motivation do they start out on? Often the mentors. So you'd want to see his or her motivation begin to become their own. In other words, the motivation to follow Christ, to stay in these things, is becoming them. And we're seeing commitment grow, we're seeing consistency, we're starting to see these things. So it's important to know that. And I'm finding in my own relationship with a couple of these people that we talk about that. We talk about, let's move together over this next year. And I've got some things we'd share through, but our goal will be to get some real consistency and growth and commitment, growth in some of the basics of what it means to follow Christ, to be praying. And this, like this one fellow, Steve, we're just right there now because he's seeing, he isn't there. It's back and forth, the way he reads his Bible in the morning, depends if he has any time. But he's suddenly now to the point. So what I'm going to do with him is we'll set a time and we'll set some ideas. Let's get some expectations. What would you like to see God do in the next 6 months in our relationship in this area? And he already said, if I could just be more consistent in my quiet time. I said, okay. So that's one of the areas we're going to do, and that's all we're going to work on, is just the faithfulness in his quiet time, and he's going to journal. Now, he's a typical old jock. He doesn't like to write. Doesn't like to read a lot. So, this is a big step when I told him, let's journal together. But he's willing to do it for 6 months. Well, hope by that time he's going to taste Christ and taste the experience and he's going to want. So. But you know a lot about these areas. So let me just press on here. The next one, of course, is what I call the spiritual guide. Now, as you see, the major thrust there is accountability. Direction, insights for commitments, and decisions affected both your spirituality and your maturity. Now, think for a moment. You may have never had this, and I wrestled with this just recently. I put a lot of this together in a book, and I the editors came back and said, "Do you really want spiritual guide? Because that's becoming a new age thing now." And I said, "Well, yeah. I mean, we tried to talk about that before, but." Spiritual guides were in operation in the scriptures and all that long before New Age ever came around. So, but these are people, as over against the discipler, which you have for a period of time in your life, a spiritual guide you may need all your life. Always touching base. May not be somebody you meet with every week at all. But it's somebody in your life that can you can tune in with. They can help you in spiritual, inner spirit issues and some just maturity, helping focus on some things. Have you ever had one of those? Have you ever been one?
Yeah? People you've watched. I mean, I don't know if you even have to have that. I've often used to get my mother with a jeweler. A very famous jeweler. She got in contact with one time. Everybody said, oh, the person impossible to get her. I don't care. I just want to watch and see how she does it. And I think in our church sometimes you'll see people up there. You think truly men of God, you don't necessarily have to have a close relationship if you can just watch it.
All right, you're hitting on another area because some people too, but is over here on this area, the passive. We'll see, these are the models. And, you know, that's where we can start right away. But that's true. I have one of these, and we meet about, whenever I feel I need it, or periodically if we don't, we get together once or twice a year. And we sat down, and I sat down with them, and recently I went to a new job. I moved from the U.S. leadership team to the international leadership team. And suddenly, this international team, although it can be an organizational promotion in one sense, the fact is I found myself with nobody to lead, nothing to do, because the world was our involvement. And so I suddenly, for about 2 or 3 months, didn't have anything. Nobody was ringing my phone, and I wasn't going anywhere. And I suddenly realized something's going on inside. So I went to spiritual guide, a fellow who just is older, walks with God, and is just... So I just told him what I was feeling. And he listened to me, and he said, you're right. I think this is a very key moment in your life. He says, I think God is dealing with your significance, who you are. Has been so involved in what you've done that this, don't miss this opportunity. Gave me a couple passages to go into, and I went into those passages, and boy, they were rich. Went back to them. We talked together about them. I traveled through this for about 2 or 3 months, and it was just a very deepening experience and freeing. But he was there to be that spiritual guide, just listen, talk, pray with me, give some ideas, and he gave me a couple of assignments, which were real good. He says, read this, and then I read something in by Host, who was the successor to Hudson Taylor, and he gave me a couple little articles to read on him, and boy, it was powerful, just, timely. But that's, we need those periodically in our life. So, and you can be those. Just to listen, just to talk. You sense somebody stirring. I was at a meeting with all these young leaders, and I was one of the oldest one there. It's really funny to get older. Leighton Ford had pulled all these guys together, and there were about 18 of them, and they're all in their 35, about 35-ish. And they're sitting there in a prayer group with one, and one guy, he was an up-and-comer in the PCA, Presbyterian Church of America, denomination, and he was church planning and just gifted. And one guy said to him, he said in our prayer, he says, really pray for me. He says, our leader, he said, in one of our meetings, he said, took down, something went wrong, and it was in my area, but he said, it was the reason it went wrong is because he failed to do a couple things. And in a large meeting with the whole board, he blamed me, put the whole thing on me. And he said, boy, he says, I lost so much respect for that man. And he said, so pray for me. I'm going to see him. I'm going to really challenge him. Well, so we all prayed, and the other guys all kind of nodded. And so I pulled him off to the side, and after we were over, and I said, I heard what you just said. And I said, can I just say one thing? Said, what's that? I said, just when you go in, don't go in to challenge him. Go in there with a humble spirit and ask him, you want to grow as a leader, something I must have done wrong, can you help me learn? And you ask him that first. He says, what? He says, this guy, he says, well, you ought to pin his ears back. He says, this, can you imagine a leader handling it? I said, that's true, it's disappointing to you. But only my suggestion. So I said that and walked away. Several months later, I had even forgotten about this, and he wrote me a letter. And God spoke to his heart, and he did do that. And he went back in there, and he said, this guy then turned. First of all, he apologized. He confessed how he was struggling in this area, and would he forgive him? and they got into a talk, a discussion. He said, we walked out of there, you know, arm in arm. We had, I learned through it. He said, I just want to say thanks. And I thought, isn't that interesting, you know? So we just need somebody. And I thought, from a mentor point of view, you know, we need to keep taking initiative on that. When we see something, now, you'd run the risk of what? He could have said, thanks, pal, but appreciate the word, but that's okay. Mentors are going to risk. But we've got to, you know, got to be involved there. Okay, then there's the coach. And you see what that is? That's particularly a time where the skills and application needed to meet a task or a certain challenge that's before you. Have any of you ever experienced a coach in anything particular? What area? What's an experience you might have had? Somebody coaching you. And usually they're just for a period of time, during that time. Marge, you're probably coaching all the time, the kids and different things. I notice that especially moms, as the kids get older. I notice there's a lot of people in the secular world, maybe you men have had that, where jobs have been given and they've not had coaches. You just kind of, there it is, go for it. But we do the same thing in the church, don't we? We get frustrated and say, well, you know, somebody take that. You know, I'll give it to John or Mary, let them go. But nobody is there to coach them. So I remember, didn't even realize it, but the first time I ever led a Bible study. I was a freshman or a sophomore in college, and the guy was a senior, and he had been discipling me. And I led the Bible study, and we talked about it before I did, and after it was over, he said, how do you think you did? I told him. He says, what would you have done differently if you could do it again? I mentioned a couple of things. And then he says, well, let me give you one suggestion. And he gave me one suggestion. And do you know that that has affected my life? Because as Howie Hendricks says, experience is great, but evaluated experience is the best of all. And we very rarely do we go back and evaluate the experience. And like this guy did, he didn't threaten me. He just said, how do you think you did? And what would you do differently? And I basically evaluate a lot of it myself. And then he gave me one little suggestion. So experience is good, but evaluated experience is best of all. And just think back how many times, how much more you could have learned from experiences if you had a coach giving you a little bit of feedback. You know? I imagine you've all played sports, right? To some degree or another. And, you know, without that coach, you know, you just, you could be making errors and errors and errors. But we need them. Like I said, I had a coach in helping me figure out how to have good devotion times with my kids. I mean, he just little things. One night, we had him Sunday night with us, and we had a time there, and I just had him come. And after it was over, the next day, I called him on the phone. I said, hey, Abe, do you have anything, any suggestions for how we're doing as a family? And he says, hey, you did a good job. Great. I said, well, any suggestions? He says, yeah, two. I said, what would that be? He says, well, number one, aim at the higher, older kids. The little kids will pick it up. He says, you're trying to get questions for every level. And he says, aim at the older kids. And he says, you don't want to lose those. And I said, whoa, that's good. Okay, because I was, you know. And then he says, and don't get discouraged if they're not all alert. And I said, well, that's good. You know, so then we talked about that for a bit. He says, you know, today, this day, our kids probably have no idea of any of the things we talked about. But he said, the fact that Dad led some time in the Word of God and pray, and we share together as a family, that's what they'll remember. So, I mean, that was when I was 31, 32, and that has just affected my whole life. So when I was ready to give up, and the kids kind of said, oh, Dad, come on, man, we've got things going, you know, and... You know, that's the way it is. For periods of time in your life, while you're using them, they're intensive. Just like I mentioned before. But so So that's why we put them in the intensive category. Any questions or comments on those intensive ones? Yeah.
I think coach is basically trying to pull out in an individual the gift that God has given them. They can do it, something that God has given them. And try to direct him towards.
Get him using it, yeah. Yeah. So it probably. Yeah, it implies that the mentor probably sees something. The coach sees something in the guy that maybe he doesn't even see himself.
You know, we have a hard time deciding what gifts God has given each one of us.
Yeah, all right. And we need that feedback, yeah.
So somebody else might be able to observe.
Can't you kind of imagine Barnabas doing this with Saul? You know, he sees something, and this feisty guy, and he, next time, not so hard. Or, you know, you got that gift of teaching, but you don't have to blast people. You know, I remember when I was first came on staff when I was 28, I was asked to come back and speak at my home church, and I blasted them. I mean, if people weren't doing disciple making, I mean, meeting with one man, didn't have a Timothy, you weren't in the ministries. You know, and I hit them. And probably, I mean, after it was over, a couple of years, oh, good young man, thank you. But I had one of my nav rep, he's a senior nav rep, and he came with me. And we're driving back, and he says, how many of you think were motivated to get involved as a result of your speaking? I said, well, I hope they all were. He said, I doubt many of them would. And so we talked about that, and I thought, wow, you know, he really helped me. And I said, well, how would have you done it? He says, I would have just talked about the Bible, about the Word of God and how it's just been changing and affecting your life. And then he said this that has really affected me. He says, when you're giving testimony, don't talk about what you've done for God. That doesn't help people. Talk about what God has done for you. And that helps people. I thought, you know.
That's basically what Lauren's doing
this morning. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, and he's great at it. Isn't he?
And I see a little bit of a tension here, where the local church leadership may feel threatened or uncomfortable if we're looking to say a person other than them in certain areas. But it's, and I try to decide what tension is there. Is it because there's a difference in authority? Is a mentoring relationship, I know there's some authority involved there, but is it not?
So you're saying if somebody's mentoring you and is not in the official or recognized leadership, that might be a little tension in the church?
Well, I think a couple of spiritual coaches in their lives don't even live in the state.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And sometimes sharing with friends who've grown up strictly in the world of the church and mentioning how we go to them for counseling stuff, I can see that they feel very I don't know how to handle that. Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out, am I breaking any rules? I don't think I am.
All right, I know we've got enough wisdom right here to get some insight on that. Okay, I'm going to ask you three men here. You're all involved in some degree. How would you counsel her to, what comes to your mind in terms of helping in that situation? Any thoughts?
Gobble up all the encouragement and teaching you can from outside sources, but don't really promote the fact that it's come from an outside source.
Okay. Good.
Jealousy is funny thing.
Isn't it? Our humanness comes out on that.
But we're not breaking the authority.
Now, where does authority come from in these kinds of relationships? Do they have positions? So whatever authority these people have, where does it come from?
From life.
Yeah.
Integrating, you know, actually living out the word of God.
Okay. Uh-huh.
All right.
From what?
From our submission.
Okay. Uh-huh. In other words, it's authority we give them based on what we see in them. So the only authority they have is what we give over to them, which I believe is the most is the most powerful authority we have. Because somebody assumes authority, we're not sure, but when we give them authority in certain areas, it's really powerful. And the most exciting thing is when they give you that authority and you've never asked for it. You can be trusted with it. You know, that's what. Let me just hit a couple of these others so we just get a feel for it, and then I'll just show you how we can work on that. This person, I call the counselor. You're well familiar with these people. You've all got them in our life. A little bit different than the spiritual guide, because the spiritual guide kind of stays with us over the years, and we'll talk about that. You can't get those overnight. But the counselor here, it says, timely advice, correct perspectives, on viewing self, other circumstances, and ministry. Just somebody who can give you timely advice in those areas. Boy, it's important. And we ought to have a couple of those in our minds, who they might be. And they keep going with us. And they're in and out. See, that's why I call them occasional. Then we have the teacher. The teacher in our life. And here is something that... again, it's occasional. And it's a function of points in time in our life where we need particular teaching or insight and knowledge in a certain area. I'll give you an example. I was leading our work in Europe after a number of years, and the charismatic question came up. And some of our works were getting very involved in it. And it seemed to be, coming out of a typical little evangelical conservative point of view, my immediate reaction was to try to stifle whatever was doing or, you know, get control of it. But I wasn't really sure, because when I visited the one country that was experiencing more than the others, I saw some good things in the midst of it. So I didn't know. So I looked to somebody. I went to a brother in Christ who was not involved in NAS, but he's a godly man, really knew the word, told him my dilemma. I said, could you help teach me, understand what the Holy Spirit is, and you know, get a hold of this issue so I can be a good guide in this area. So he said, sure. And he says, let's first get in the Word. So we talked about passages, and I studied those, came back in about a month. We sat down and worked through that. To come down, and what he insisted I do is come up with a summary statement of what the Holy Spirit's role is, what... You know, and it really was helpful, what gifts are all about, where the Holy Spirit involved in that. And then, after we had done that, he gave me about, I think it was four different books, written by four different people in about the Holy Spirit and the charismatic background and all the rest, had me read those and evaluate each one of those in light of what the Bible was saying. And we sat down and we talked about it. It took us about 7-8 months to do this. And it was so helpful, because then when I came out of it, I really... had a better grasp and understanding of what it was all about, and I could help our staff in that situation. So there, I needed that teacher for that particular point in my time, in my life. So that a teacher can be really helpful. He didn't teach me as much as he guided my learning, and I think that was wise on his part. So those teachers can be important to us. And then finally, a sponsor. Now, a sponsor is more... In an organization like the church, or a secular organization, or like here we have the Navigators, as it says here, it's career guidance and protection as one moves within an organization. We saw a little bit of this in who? Barnabas with Saul. He basically sponsored him, got him going so he could express his gifts. Now, can you think of anybody that... in your church or someplace that's kind of needs a sponsor? You know, we do need them, don't we? And often it's some reasons there, and there's other aspects to it. But we've faced that a number of times here in the NAVs, where one fellow in particular, he was a gifted young leader, and every time I met him and every time I went by and saw him, his leader kept saying, well, he's too ambitious, he's too eager, let's just, you know, and he needs to stay another couple more years and help learn this and really be humble. And well, finally, this guy was getting discouraged to the point of leaving. And so I had to kind of go down with this fellow, and we talked about, let's get him out of there. And so we did. We got him out of there into a whole new situation, and then the guy just began to bloom. But he came over with that reputation because this one fellow told him, oh, be careful, the guy's got a big ego. And so we kind of worked through that, and finally, you know, he was able to go begin developing. But for a while there, we needed to, you know, he needed some help. I've seen guys on the other side, is that they have gifts, but they never have had a chance to really move forward with them because they're always a bit reticent. And somebody needs to kind of get in there and say, hey, you can be involved here. You could help. Oh, no, not me. I really can't do that. You see that in the churches. Some fellow's been the assistant teacher for years, and he could really teach, but he always, oh, no. Or do something else. So, you know, it's we've got a guy right now teaching in one of our Sunday school classes in my church where he took over very reluctantly to substitute for 2 weeks when this other main teacher was there. And this guy was so good. I mean, it was a pleasure to be with him. But, I mean, he just thought, oh, well, I have 2 weeks, I'm out, you know. And so we had to kind of keep going and get him involved. Now, this last one is what I call the models. And you'll see we have two different kinds here. One is the historical, and one is the contemporary. Historical, as it says here, is, I put them in a different order, but a past life that teaches us dynamic principles and just values for life. And often we respond to them because of the values we hold to be important and really vital for us. Same with the contemporary model. The contemporary model is one who is basically living out in his own personal life some of those values, just like you were saying earlier, John, just seeing some of these people. And boy, they're powerful. And they can mentor us. Now, how do they mentor us? How do they influence? How do these models influence our lives?
Motivation.
Okay. Motivation, some areas. Uh-huh. Often they can show us how when you watch them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah, there's other things you learn about this person. Any of you have any historical models? Now, where do we pick up the historical models? Where do we get those? Where do we learn about them? Yeah, some from the Word. Books. Mainly books. Yeah. Mainly books. Who are some of your historic models? Okay. Now, they would be more contemporary. In terms of the... they've had... and they're already retired and moved away. Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Combination. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't even know him, but yet, I mean, those of us who've heard something about him know there's something there in his life.
Yeah, and then he's had the same, you know, some of those men have been living
for
4 years.
Okay. Doesn't it? Yeah. Especially today. Okay. Okay. Yeah, through gates of splendor, did you... Uh-huh. Yeah, I can remember that. That was a real... impact of my life when I read Through Gates of Splendor. Boy, I couldn't believe a guy 25, 26 years old could write those kind of things and believe those kind of things and focus his life. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, those are historic models that have actually left the scene. We read about them.
Yeah, I think in your sense of books, you can go back a long way.
Yeah.
John Edwards.
Sure. Well, see, what a lot of times, like, for instance, I've talked about this with some people, and the guy says, well, you know, I don't have any of these people in my life, and, you know, where do I start? I said, well, you can start tomorrow by go getting a book on Hudson Taylor or George Mueller and start reading them. Now, there are two major books put out by George Mueller, or about George Mueller, biographies, and one is George Mueller of Bristol, which was written a long time ago. Another was A Steadfast with God. And I have read those because Mueller became a real model for me. And I'm just rereading the one. I guess I've read it maybe about 10 times. And I've got notes through it. But that guy has ministered to me in very specific ways. Because I get into situations and I would all of a sudden it'd come back, what did George Mueller do in this? You know? And not that I'm going to copy that, but, you know, he made some commitments in his life at a very early age. It was actually late 20s, about not telling anybody his need. And he stuck that a box in the back of the church and wasn't going to tell anybody about it, and he was going to live only from that. But it was fine until then, you know, when he was married and his wife then suddenly got sick and she needed money to buy medication. And they didn't have it coming in. And he was torn between telling people that and just believing God and praying. Because the drive of his life was he wanted to demonstrate to people that the God of Isaac and God of Jacob is also the God of George Mueller and can provide and meet our needs. And so at a young age, he prayed, and God, in a miraculous way, again, you know, very early in his life, had met that need, and he never had to tell anybody. And it really challenged him in prayer, because the person who actually gave a very substantial gift that covered everything was meaning to give that gift for 3 weeks, but kept forgetting. And so he, by his praying and praying, got that person to give that gift. And so it also drove a lesson of perseverance in prayer. And just several months ago, God, you know, I was going through some things, and I prayed, you know, I remember, perseverance, I got to pray. You know, and I thought of George Mueller, and of course, you know. So these historical models can really minister to us, and the contemporary models. Now, how can we increase their effectiveness in our life? These both historic and contemporary model. What comes to your mind? How can we increase it?
You have read that book 10 times.
Okay.
So you just keep getting information out of that book that helps you in your prayer life.
Okay.
Your faith,
mm-hmm.
Your trusting.
So in the case of historic models, we can keep reading and all the rest. How about contemporary models? How can we increase their effect on our life? Good, okay. So, for instance, what would be a practical way to do that? Okay. Just specific questions, you know, and I'm sure that some of you are models to others, and you don't even realize it. Now, how could you, let me just ask another question first. Is it wrong for you to think that you could be a model to somebody? Is that arrogant? It could be. But are you willing to admit the fact that you probably are to some people?
Huh?
Yeah. The what? Yeah. So, how would we increase our effectiveness of being a model for other people?
I think talk about what you've done for God.
Well, I think the reverse is just what Marge said. Is it, in other words, getting around people. Getting around people. We've got this fellow in this one church, and he they're in their late 50s, around 60, and they said, you know, I'd love to, we're talking about mentoring. He says, well, I couldn't do much. I said, do you know how other people feel about you? Oh, well, if they only knew me. And I said, no, there's some godliness that they see in some areas of your life. And he says, well, I that's just the grace of God. And I said, but are you just going to store that up, or could you share it with somebody? He says, well, I can't teach, I can't do anything. And he isn't. He's not that kind of a person. He's not real. He wouldn't be good up in front of people. And so I said, would you do one thing? I said, pick out one couple, probably in their early 30s, somewhere in there, with maybe a couple young kids, and just say, my wife and I want to get to know some of the younger people in our church, and would you come over after church next Sunday and join us for dinner? And then when they get over there, when you're there, as you sit and you talk, get to know them, before they leave, ask, we love to pray for young couples, and we'd love to pray for you. Are there two things we could pray for you? And then when you get that, you know, just really pray for them. And then somewhere around that following Wednesday or Thursday, give that young man a call and just say, we've been praying for you. How you doing? Just say that. And I guarantee something's going to happen. He says, well, we can do that. So they did. They invited this couple over. They had this time. And they had a great time. And when they asked what were two things, it actually took about an hour conversation because they began to ask questions about it, because there are these older folk who have been married and had three kids. And so anyhow, they prayed for those two things. And he called that young man on Thursday and said, how you doing? And this guy was so touched that somebody was praying and concerned about him. He said, could we get together sometime? He said, sure. So they set up another appointment, had breakfast somewhere together the next week, met together, talked. He says, is there some other things I could pray for you? And they started to pray for this couple. Then they had them back again about a month later. And do you know, it turned out that this couple really didn't have much of a home life. And they have now, their little kids are starting to call the other people grandma and grandpa. And they've got a relationship that is just terrific. And his life is now beginning to impact, or their life, this young couple's life. And they are asking questions. And if you ask him, are you mentoring this guy or this other couple? He'd probably say, oh, no, we're just, you know. So he's not willing to kind of say, I'm a mentor, but he's affecting other people. Now, he's moved from becoming a model, they're modeling, but he's starting to become a little bit in here, a little bit of a counselor, a little bit of a coach. Some things are taking place. So, you know, if we could just get people into the ball game of mentoring, God just takes over, because there are things, God-given resources, that we can pass on. So, now obviously, for instance, things like accountability enter in, and you mentioned this, Susan, this... And now when it's up on this end, it's much stronger, very little down this end, because these models aren't going to hold us accountable, you know, those kinds of things. There needs to be what we call responsiveness, and there needs to be some kind of attraction. Those are kind of three dynamics which are constantly in play. Now, let's just talk for a second. What about attraction? What would attraction, what comes to your mind in terms of attraction?
Well, you're kind of drawn to
people. Yeah, okay. You see something in their life you're attracted to, okay? Yeah, right, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, how about from the mentoring point, the mentor point of view? If you're looking for some future mentorees, what would attract you?
I would think I'd
want to
be with somebody that I felt good around.
Okay. All right. So just a sense of the chemistry is okay. All right. What else? All right. Now, How would you know that?
Did they ask questions and you say something, you just share something with you, like, and they come back later and say, I tried it. Or in some way you get some idea that they didn't just throw it right out and you really listened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. They want to grow. They want to.
Yeah.
They want to develop. Yeah, there's something there. Okay.
Not always though, because it might be a situation where the person is experiencing more problems.
Yeah.
In their life. And that can also be attractive.
Yeah.
That you want to help.
Right. Yeah. There are some people, like you can get into, and they just become more kind of hanging on you for dependence. And you need to think about that, because sometimes they may need that for a little bit till they get off on their own. But somewhere along the way, you need to see some real desire to grow and move ahead. Have you ever tried giving them a little task? My wife and I both do this in new relationships. So even like this fellow Steve. Now he did respond to a lot of things I told him, but now getting into this thing, I've given him a little task, and that was just a little book to read, and I want him to read it, and then I said, when you finish, give me a call and we'll get together and talk about it. Now 2 weeks have passed by and I'm still waiting. So you see, I want to know, is he interested in growing? Yeah, I'm just beginning to introduce that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. See, and if I jump into it and he's not there yet, then I just say, hey, let's just be friends. Let's continue to have muffins and coffee and talk about being a good dad. And I'll keep praying for him. But, you know, so it's good. And oftentimes my wife has done this with the women that she's been involved with, where she's going to get serious, not just a friendship, but and has given a little task. And normally, it's a book or something doable, something simple, and just said, you know, read this or do this, and when you finish, give me a call, and we'll sit down and talk about it. And some of them have come back within 5 days, you know, and they've a new book I'm using right now. It's a secular book, but it's a very good one. It's called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Have you read that, anybody? It's done by Stephen Covey. He's a Mormon, but it doesn't say that in the book. But I just happened to find out he's really good. He's writing from 30, 40 years in business and experience and a lot of good values. Well, these 7 habits are really good habits. Like one of them is you always begin with the end in mind. Well, I've done this with a couple of men. Well, what I've done, we've talked about the book, and he said, fine. I said, all right, we'll read the first habit, the first 2 chapters, actually. One's an introduction. And when you get there, give me a call. It's called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Mm-hmm. But it's really fun. It's good for men and women. It's just really good. And at the back, in the appendix, if you ever, it's in paperback now too, so it's a lot cheaper. But he lists a number of things of what a spiritually oriented life would be, if that's your number one, or if your family's number one, how it affects the others, or if your business is number one, how it affects the others. I mean, and this is a secular, presentation. But I'm not trying to push the book as much as I'm saying that kind of thing, a book where you can go through is a great initiator. So with two fellows I've gone through that with, we went through the whole book. It took us about 6-7 months to do that. And he really developed in his business, his ability in business because of a couple of problems. But also, we got into some spiritual things, which is great. And he saw how the Bible just really affects somebody's thinking. You know, I mean, this isn't just some guy out here, but the Bible thought of these things long before that. So it's good, you know, and now we're starting to get into some others.
Oh, you
know,
you said maybe the Steve is not a reader.
Right.
And if you give him a little taste, wow, what have I been missing on, you know, and what is appetite?
Well, that's a good point. I haven't thought of that. That's very good. Well, you know, with men, a lot of that's a good point because I carry a lot of tapes. I have in my library good tapes that you pick up here and there at conferences or a place. Hang on to those things, and I've done the same thing. Listen to this tape, and when you finish, give me a call, and we'll talk about it. You know, that kind of thing.
I was wondering, too, when you're talking about when we sometimes we see an evil person, but we know it's really not our strength.
Okay.
Then should we just kind of, maybe if we see somebody else's their strength, see if we can afford them, maybe that'll be
okay, now that would be a possibility, but if you have the relationship, sometimes I have a couple areas that are not my, you know, that are very clearly not my strengths, that I've worked with other guys are, and I've told them that, and so that's what we've got involved in this kind of a co-mentoring in some areas where he has really helped me become stronger in this area, and you know sometimes relationships need to be two ways, so if you go on now a couple times I've had men that I've mentored that have become some of my closest friends, two of them. And I've mentored initially over the first 2 years. We're about the same age, and we became very close friends. The chemistry was just there, and it was one of those good relationships. And before you know it, we started to do things together and other, you know, fun things and became really good friends. And they have really ministered to me in a co-mentoring area. So, don't go away from it just because it's not your strength, but sometimes it's, if the relationship is already there, you can pursue it together. So, you know, that's a possibility, but you're right. Sometimes you want to say, just like the guy who's really close to me, once he's came out of a very secular environment, and he is a sailboater, has his own sailboat, and he is into people, neat people. So he wants to reach these people, and we've talked about and prayed. Well, Jim Peterson, Marge's husband, is a real good buddy of mine, and he is so good at this. So, you know, he just asked me just last week, do you think I could meet together with Jim sometime? And we'll arrange that. We'll arrange a breakfast sometime, and this guy can bang some questions. So sometimes you bring in a resource, and or some guy comes into town or something like that. You say, "Hey, I want you to meet this guy. He could." Okay, how are we doing? We got just a few more minutes. Any questions or thoughts here? I'm going to cover just one more thing of how to get on board here. How do you initiate some of these things? Any questions?
A lot of work.
What? You mean the mentoring? Yeah, it is. Well, what isn't, huh? It's so true. It's just, if something's going to really have meaning, it costs. You know, and that's really true. It's our third child just got engaged, brought this neat little gal home. He's a senior in college, and they're getting married in the very end of May. And she's just a super little gal. We talked to her. And then we're excited about that. And we've really had to work through. Our oldest daughter got married to a fellow that came out of a broken home and no model, either as a marriage or father or anything. And we really had to work and get involved, boy, in prayer and things with him. His solution when they had conflicts was to, his dad would just blurt out something hard and harsh and walk in and turn the TV on and just sit there and go to bed when he wanted to. Oh, what do you think our son-in-law did the first time there's conflict? Blurted out something loud and walked in and turned on television. You know, so we've had to really work through that, and it's just taken a huge effort, and God's doing some neat things. Well, all of a sudden, this little gal, we start talking about it, and she said something. Well, her parents are divorcing. They're Christians, but they're divorcing. Her mother has left no model for her. She just doesn't respect her mom at all. And then we looked at each other and we said, oh boy, what that's going to be, you know. How we'd love to just, you know, send her to a little course before she got married or, you know. Yeah, but we just know, and he's just happily in love and he sees this a little bit. So we were with him the other day and, you know, we're talking at the table and we just We're talking about conflict. So, you know, importance of having a conflict resolution kind of commitment in there. And so I, thinking I would be, we'd get into it right away. I'd say, well, now, for instance, when was your last conflict? They both looked at each other and said, this afternoon. And it was obvious it wasn't settled. So here's this neat little, you know, in a diner and, you know, in a restaurant. And they started into obviously trying to be nice, but this conflict wasn't there, you know. So anyhow, we got involved that night. But when we went home that night, we said, wow, it's going to be cost. She needs to be mentored. And we don't have any choice. Maybe God's going to bring somebody in her life and terrific little gal, but it starts showing when they get married, you know, that the lack of a model and lack of understanding of what it means to be a wife. And you guys all know that, but cost. As the
one of the things I was thinking about Barnabas sitting in prison with Paul, and he's been hit by a few rocks. And Paul says, what should I do differently? He says, well, remember when they said this, next time try something a little softer.
Yeah, right. Sometimes just stating the obvious helps, you know, because that's like, you know, it's, yeah, it's really good. That's what I told somebody, you know, having just turned 50, I thought, you know, this is a great age. You're old enough to know something, but you're young enough to do something about it, you know. And it's, you don't have to quote everybody all the time. So, you know, I did notice that there are couples. We work with a number of young couples, and they're all in their late 30s. And so when they have a lot of their social things and fun things, that we don't get invited, although they look at us real close. But we're just older, and our kids are a lot older. But it's just so much fun because you have freedom to say some things that 10 years ago I couldn't have, you know. But that's why I'm just encouraging us that's getting older. What a job this mentoring. Got a lot of mentorees out there. Let's just talk about how you initiate a mentoring relationship. And let me just start off with the first thing, whether you're going one way or the other, is the first thing is to identify the need. Whoops, the need area. Now that's really important, and that's why I identify these eight up here, because a lot of them have certain areas. Is it a coaching? Is it some need that needs coaching? Or is it a counseling area? Or is it some discipling area? Or is it you know, just some other aspect? You know, what is it that if I'm going to be a mentoree, if I'm looking for a mentor, what are my needs? But if you're going the other way around, what would be then the area you'd look for if you were going to be a mentor? You want to mentor some people. What would be the contrast to this? Instead of identifying a need area, what would I identify? Yeah, okay. Identify some areas of strength or just what I have to offer. You know, it can be just a friendship. It can be just confidence. It can be just encouragement. It can be just prayer at the beginning. But there's something God has placed in your life that if you pass it on, it would really help someone. I've been in rooms, let's say if this room were full with 30 people, I bet, given the age spans and all the rest, we would have all the wisdom we need to probably solve almost any problem anybody's going to come up against. I mean, you just talk long enough to people. It's really... you know, there's just so much there. Okay. The second one may be obvious, but I just can't tell you how much that was, that's key. It's just pray. Mentors and mentorees are gifts. They're privileges, and God gives them. And I can imagine Barnabas was just praying a lot for that guy Saul. Now, Saul probably wasn't praying for a guy like Barnabas. That's conjecture. My feeling is he just didn't have even time to think about him needing. He just wanted to get on with the task. But those of us who've perhaps been around a little bit longer, we understand there's some needs in my life. And I need someone. And so you start praying. Or like in most of our cases here, some strengths. Who could I give those to? How could I be developing in those areas? Maybe start putting together the thoughts you do have on a particular subject. Next one is begin to look around, ask around. And that's important. Just start looking while you're praying. Look in and ask it. If you're looking for some help and a mentor, you start asking, you know, who's good at this area that I happen to need? Maybe you see someone. Or just like I did, I was sitting in church and all of a sudden this Abe was up there and I thought, hey, he transitioned to another culture. He raised a whole family. I like what I see in his family. There's a guy. So I went to him and asked. But just look around. You'd be surprised. Same thing the other way. You start looking. If you want to mentor someone, just start looking around for some of those things we've talked about. Just a young couple to pray. And, you know, next thing is just initiate. Relationship. Get to know. Now, in the process, you'd pick up some of the things that Jack mentioned. You know, is there some kind of chemistry or affinity there? That would be important. And in that context, you'd probably share, as you got good feedback, share a little bit of your desire. If I were a mentor and with some young couples, just and I sense as we got to know each other, just I might initiate something. Let's get together. And I've been looking for a young man or a young couple or whatever it might be to just pray for and get a little closer to. And I'd like to just meet and talk about some of those things that you're facing that we could pray about. And you know, he might say, oh, okay. You know, he's never heard that before. But I have never found anyone at this point, once you've started to get to know them a little bit, and you can tell, you kind of tell how they'll respond. And sometimes they've even initiated, gone into, you know, taking the ball and started to move with it. Next thing is what's really important is the exchange of expectations. And I've given a couple little illustrations to that of what expectation should we have of this, of our relationship. And if our desire, for instance, is to grow or to be a better dad, you know, or somebody like something like that, or what expectations would be realistic for us? And we talk about that. That we could really help and encourage each other, okay, we could pray, we should pray for each other, yeah. How often should we meet together on a regular basis? I says, well, yeah, my schedule's a little bit erratic, but yeah, how about every 2 weeks? Well, that's a little too much, maybe. Guy says, well, maybe every 3 or 4 weeks. All right, how do we do that? Well, we'll set up the appointment for the next time, each time we meet. Okay, so that seems to, all right, let's do that. Now, how about should we pursue anything together? You know, like a little assignments that we'll do when we come back and prep. Guy said, yeah, that'd be good. So we can expect to do that, and if I come, you know, what, take a couple hours to do? Yeah, that'd be all right. You'd have a couple hours to do that? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. Or the guy might say, like Steve did, well, no, let's just talk. I like just talk. Okay? Great. See, but what would be frustrating, if I'm entering into this thinking I'm going to give him an assignment,